The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Another Joe Biden gaffe.
For God's sake, this man cannot remain power.
The White House trying to make clear in the aftermath, or making very clear in the aftermath, he was not, in fact, calling for regime change.
But this one proved more troubling even than the others.
It would be best for all involved, to include Joe Biden, but especially for the American people, if the president would simply stop speaking publicly in an extemporaneous fashion.
And it has led to more questions about President Biden's infirmity.
This was the world's most predictable problem.
Meanwhile, a satire site is punished.
Twitter's going to ban themselves into irrelevance at some point.
And we'll look at the need to beef up America's military.
I think the budget signals that President Biden and his defense team are choosing decline.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program, please, as well, at Town Hall Review. We'll begin in Poland, in President Biden's speech last week condemning Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Let's just say the president went way off script.
For God's sake, this man cannot remain power.
The White House trying to make clear in the aftermath, or making very clear in the aftermath, he was not, in fact, calling for regime change.
While many agree with the general sentiment expressed, these are dangerous and counterproductive words coming from the mouth of the President of the United States. And any president should be well aware of the danger of just sort of vamping. This is not the case with President Biden. I discussed the gaffe with Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton.
I do not want the President of the United States to be infirm or mocked by foreign tyrants. What do we do?
That press conference was unnerving, the well-chosen word, although I have to say probably not as unnerving as the president's statements during his trip to Europe last week. Obviously, the most unsettling and imprudent statement was when he, in effect, called for regime change and nuclear-armed Russia, but he also seemed to suggest that the United States might use chemical weapons against Russia, or that the troops we have in places like Poland may soon be deploying to Ukraine, contrary to his announced policy. And then again, he denied it all in that press conference.
When you walk back a walk back, that's what's unnerving.
One can agree on the merits with what Joe Biden said about the treachery of Vladimir Putin if you're a talk radio host or an editorial columnist or just a normal American. But when you're an elected official, especially when you're the president, ad-libbing and speaking about it, I think Joe Biden called it his emotional outrage, is highly unwise. And it's dangerous to our national security. And most presidents throughout history have known that. They don't get to engage in off-the-cuff, extemporaneous moralizing that could threaten the interests and the safety of the American people. At this point, with just under 3 years to go in the Biden presidency, I genuinely think it would be best for all involved, to include Joe Biden, but especially for the American people, if the president would simply stop speaking publicly in an extemporaneous fashion. He should not ad-lib in speeches when he's reading from a teleprompter. And frankly, I don't think he should continue to take questions or do press conferences. I know that lots of Republicans and conservatives like to criticize the president for his lack of accessibility or his refusal to hold regular press conferences. But I think for the good of the nation and for the safety of our people, we should all agree broadly, we on the center right in America, that if Joe Biden would simply stop speaking extemporaneously, stop doing press conferences or press availabilities, we'll agree that that's not a solid ground to criticize him. Look at
I will agree 100%.
Yeah, there's plenty of grounds to criticize the president on the results and the outcomes of his policies and decisions. We don't need to criticize him on the process point of he's not answering enough questions. If he'll simply agree to stop answering questions, stop ad-libbing and ripping off the cuff from a prepared speech on a teleprompter, if we could get 3 years of Joe Biden speaking in deliberate fashion on words that have been carefully reviewed and vetted, even if we disagree with those words, that would be safer than what happened over the last 5 days.
What do you think Putin, Xi, Khamenei think is going on? And they may not know who's in charge in the United States.
Well, if you put yourself in their shoes in Moscow or Beijing or Tehran, what's happened over the last 5 days has probably been confusing, but it's also been, in some cases, a windfall. Vladimir Putin has been claiming for almost his entire time in office in Russia that the United States wants to engineer his ouster. He's believed that and fervently declared that repeatedly. And Joe Biden essentially gave him a massive propaganda victory simply by going off the cuff, clearly speaking off teleprompter on his emotional feelings. Again, I think we all have very strong feelings about the devastation we see in Ukraine and about the villainy of Vladimir Putin. And again, it's fine to say that if you're a normal American, if you're a talk radio host, if you're an editorial columnist. But when you are responsible for the safety of the American people, as I am, as other elected senators and congressmen are, and most especially as the president is, you know, it's imprudent to be moralizing extemporaneously in such a fraught moment.
What do we do to prop up the president right now in the eyes of the world, Senator Cotton, to confirm that the United States is strong and steady?
For the last month, the Congress has actually been pushing the president to take a firmer stance with Ukraine. It's a very clear pattern, whether it's sanctions or weapons deliveries or the ban on Russian oil imports or revoking Russia's permanent most favored nation status. The pattern is clear. The president is usually a few days behind Congress to include members of his own party, and then he takes a decision. We need to continue that, and I think Congress will continue it, even if many of the Democrats in Congress still hesitate from some of the tougher measures I would advocate. They're at least tougher than this president. And I think it's an important signal to Vladimir Putin and our other adversaries that Congress continue to assert itself and take a stand on behalf of international stability and support the Ukrainian people.
The continuous Biden gaffes have led to a very important question, and one not to be taken lightly. Is Joe Biden's infirmity what we think might be some sort of cognitive decline associated with aging enough to warrant more acute concern? He's 79 years old, clearly having difficulty with his speech, an issue he did not have 10 years ago. Byron York of the Washington Examiner joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
For God's sake, this man cannot remain power.
The White House trying to make clear in the aftermath, or making very clear in the aftermath, he was not, in fact, calling for regime change.
And you're going to see when you're there, and some of you have been there, you're going to see women, young people standing in the middle of front of a damn tank.
White House officials are telling us that President Biden does not intend to send U.S. troops into Ukraine.
If chemical weapons were used in Ukraine, would that trigger a military response from NATO?
It would trigger a response in kind.
The United States has no intention of using chemical weapons, period, under any circumstance.
Okay, so that's an RNC mashup, Byron, but those are the three gaffes.
No, the response in kind thing was just, I went, what? We're going to use chemical weapons?
Yeah, they're forbidden by treaty. Yeah.
It was, wow, it was something else. He's made these three really big gaffes on the world stage where he was speaking for the United States. And I think what the worry that it gives you is that the president, who is by far the oldest president in U.S. history, going to be 82 years old when he finishes his term, has slowed down a lot. He is not very quick in processing questions and information. And what happens when you have a vacuum in a structure like the White House and the executive branch, then you have willful advisors who seek to use this as an opportunity to press their own agendas. Joe Biden gets to make U.S. foreign policy. He was the guy who was elected president. And if he is not fully able to do so, that's a really worrisome situation.
What does Putin think? What does Xi think about Biden after that performance?
I think they wonder who's in charge. They listen to the president say these things, and then his aides immediately walk them back, and then the president say, no, didn't happen. They wonder if there's a level of confusion atop the U.S. government that should be concerning not just our adversaries like Putin and Xi, but to our friends as well. So
Is it different from the Trump confusion that Trump sowed when the former president would give his off the... I mean, he always talked to the press.
The only thing that was different is that Trump said so many things that were either exaggerations or just plain wrong, or he was making some sort of joke, or who knows what.
They always knew Trump was ultimately in control.
Yeah, they listened to Trump differently, but they did realize that... And this is the basis of this argument. I don't know if it's true, but this argument that Russia would not have invaded Ukraine if Trump were still president. And the reason was, is they were afraid of what he might do. It was, you and I discussed this, it's the Soleimani effect.
I believe it. Yeah, I believe that. Because he was in control. He would be inconsistent, but he would always tell Pompeo, and Pompeo would do what he told. I don't know that about Blinken or Jake Sullivan. O'Brien would do what Trump told him to do.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying about willful advisors. I'm not pointing at any particular person, but the weakness of a leader who has the exclusive constitutional authority to conduct foreign policy, the weakness does create this opportunity for people in his administration to do what they think ought to be done, as opposed to maybe what the president thinks
ought to
be done.
Now, Byron, we saw the Ginny Thomas text to Mark Meadows. So some of the Ginny Thomas texts are fine. All of them are unobjectionable. She texts to Mark Meadow. What do you think those texts are saying right now?
We're guessing. This is total conjecture. But what happens when there's this air of confusion is that people text a person in authority and say, what's going on?
Yep.
Or if it's clear that, you know, the president just committed the United States to using chemical weapons, there's a sort of WTF questions saying, you got to fix this. You got to walk this back. I would not be surprised if there were a combination of what's going on and you got to fix this text in all three of the occasions that Peter Doocy listed.
How are we going to do this for 3 years? I'm exhausted thinking about this for 3 years.
Yeah. First of all, this was the world's most predictable problem. We knew Joe Biden's age all through the campaign. Democrats had 20-something candidates to choose from, ended up picking him, and then he got elected president. So, this was the world's most predictable problem.
Coming up.
I think the budget signals that President Biden and his defense team are choosing decline.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. It's hard to imagine, even once, but multiple times now, that the satire site Babylon Bee has seen their jokes fact-checked by a major newspaper. At the same time, they've run into trouble with Twitter, which shut down their account recently, once again, over a joke. The Bee created a satirical article about Rachel Levine, Assistant Secretary for Health for the Department of Health and Human Services, and a much-celebrated transgendered official in the Biden administration. Twitter locked the Bee's account, later rejected their appeal. Salem host Charlie Kirk spoke with the Babylon Bee's Seth Dillon.
So walk us through why you won't bend the knee to Twitter, and I'm sure I'll agree.
Yeah, we decided that we weren't going to. I mean, that's exactly how we saw it. We saw it as bending the knee.
They're not just saying, you know, you violated our terms, so we're going to delete the tweet for you. They're saying you need to delete it. And when you delete it, you're attesting to the fact that you acknowledge that you engaged in hateful conduct. And we're just sitting here like, come on. I mean, you can't ask that of us. You can't ask us to admit that we engaged in hateful conduct. Of course, we dispute that we did. For one thing, our post was a joke, right? It's a satirical parody of a real world story that happened where Rachel Levine was named Woman of the Year by USA Today. So we're cracking a joke about that. But on the other hand, like you said, you know, comedy is rooted in the truth. And this particular joke is rooted in the truth that a biological male person is a man. And so that's the truth. That's the basis behind the joke. And we're certainly not going to say that 2 and 2 make 5 here so that we can get back in Twitter's good graces. So I'm sure you agree with us that that's a good reason to as good a reason as any to take a stand.
So it says, violating our rules against hateful conduct. You may not promote violence against, threaten, harass other people on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, sexual orientation, gender identity, religious affiliation, age, disability, or serious disease. Funny, I get harassed of those things all the time on Twitter, and people don't get banned, but whatever. But talk more broadly here, Seth, about how important it is that we don't just give Twitter what they want. So I don't have access to my Twitter account. You don't have access to your Twitter account at the Babylon Bee. Those are big platforms. Tucker doesn't either. So this is a growing thing. Do you think Twitter's going to, you know, respond to our appeals, or are we just never going to get back on Twitter?
We may never get back on Twitter, but, and, you know, my comment on that is, then so be it. I mean, I think, you know, you want me to comment on the importance of this, or like what, or why, you know, why this is necessary, why we feel this is like a hill to die on. I mean, if everybody just simply rolls over and does whatever Twitter wants and engages in this kind of like reality denial, where we all have to use the language they want us to use, affirm the things they want us to affirm, refuse to deny things that we wish to deny, then we're handing them power that they shouldn't have over us. And so I think that Twitter will face, if they eventually get to the point where they're asking people to say and believe or not say what they believe, things that are just so outrageous and outlandish and insane that people in large numbers finally say, you know, no, we're not going along with this. We're not deleting our tweets. We're not going to abide by your rules. Twitter's going to ban themselves into irrelevance at some point. But unless and until somebody takes a stand, a bold stand, somebody with a following that's got some influence, people aren't going to be emboldened to follow suit. And I think that once you get one person that stands up, another might feel a little emboldened to do it, and then another, and then another. And the next thing you know, you've got a mass of people who are standing in defense of truth and reason and goodness and freedom. Maybe that'll happen. I don't know. That wasn't what we were originally planning on, like trying to lead that charge. We were just simply standing on principle and saying the right thing to do is not delete this tweet.
Go to townhallreview.com to hear the entire conversation. As the world grows clearly more dangerous, punctuated by Putin's invasion of Ukraine, the United States defense budget remains neglected. As long as Democrats control both chambers, it is likely to be underfunded into the future. I spoke with Congressman Mike Gallagher. The president put in a defense budget, and the Wall Street Journal slams it wholly inadequate. Senator Ernst of the Senate Armed Services slammed it. What is your assessment of the president's budget?
I think the budget signals that President Biden and his defense team are choosing decline in this decade. They have no sense of the urgency of the threat we face, particularly the threat posed by the Chinese Communist Party, a threat which will grow more acute at the midpoint of this decade. The budget is built on magical assumptions about inflation, which are just at odds with reality. And the fact that they're selling it as a defense increase, even though all of the increase will be eaten by inflation, and it does not keep pace with inflation, is profoundly intellectually dishonest, which leads me to my second point. They're wrapping this defense cut, and that's what it is, in this pseudo-intellectual jargon that they're calling integrated deterrence. And this is what I tried to write about in an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Integrated deterrence is a fancy way of saying we can afford to cut hard power and somehow magical new technology that won't come online until a decade from now, or allies, or soft power can pick up the slack. Integrated deterrence is precisely the type of deterrence that failed to deter Putin in Ukraine. And now the Biden Pentagon is trying to pretend like it was a success. It is a disgrace. I agree completely with what my colleague Elaine Loria said about the Navy components of the budget in particular.
And she's a Democrat. And change she's a Democrat.
Course, Democrat from Virginia had what I thought was a very brave and on the money string of tweets about this and pointed to the simple fact. You know, Hugh, I was a liberal arts major, so check my math on this. But the Navy is proposing to pay for 9 ships, but then decommission 24 ships. So what does that mean? A net loss of 15 ships? It is time for the Secretary of the Navy to take a stand against this nonsense. It makes absolutely no sense. And the Biden Pentagon needs to go back to the drawing board, revisit their assumptions. And it's clear to me they have learned no lessons from the ongoing crisis in Ukraine.
Now, Senator, when President Trump attempted to retire an aircraft carrier, the Congress said no, and they restored the cut. Will the Congress say no to the 24 ship? I mean, you can do that. You can say you will keep these ships running. We need the tubes. Will Congress throw a roadblock in the way of the decommissioning of those ships?
I believe we will. And as evidence, I would say last year in the NDAA process, we did precisely that. We took a look at an inadequate Biden budget that was a cut in real terms. And we, in a bipartisan fashion, decided to increase the top line. And the threats have only grown more urgent since. Obviously, there will be debates over different priorities. But I believe on balance, Congress in a bipartisan fashion will say to the Biden administration, this makes no sense, and we will take corrective action. That being said, Hugh, the more we're at war with ourselves and the more we have to argue over all this stuff, the more we lose time. And if you think that somehow she is deterred because Putin's experiencing some friction in Ukraine, you are not paying attention to the lifelong ambition of the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. I believe we will see a crisis over Taiwan. And the more we disinvest in our own defense and pretend we're doing something smart and invent new phrases like integrated deterrence to cover up a cut to conventional defense, the more we make that invasion likely. So I believe the Congress must step up to the plate and force the Biden administration to do better.
Coming up,
I hear that Dr. Fauci has gone into witness protection because of what he's doing to the Democrats' poll numbers.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. It's a look at today's most compelling stories and provides responses from key conservatives in media and politics. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The COVID nightmare has exposed the Democratic Party's desire to control Americans. But Americans love and still value freedom. And this has cost Democrats dearly in the few elections that have taken place recently. And it has the Democratic Party in panic as midterm elections loom. Some have noticed the absence of Dr. Anthony Fauci, the longtime face of all things COVID. Remember him? The Daily Wire's Michael Knowles produced a 3-part documentary on Dr. Fauci titled Fauci Unmasked. He discussed the project with Salem host Chris DeGaulle out of Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
This guy, I think the documentary will lay out at every turn for many, many decades now, has been on the leading edge of failure.
He's been on the leading edge of failure, certainly, but he's been one of the cleverest politicians we've got. Even as you allude, he seems to have disappeared in recent weeks. I hear that Dr. Fauci has gone into witness protection because of what he's doing to the Democrats' poll numbers. But Dr. Fauci has been around a long time, and he didn't just happen overnight. He's been in government since the 1980s. He is the highest paid employee of the federal government. He's the one person in the government that Joe Biden has said he will not fire under any circumstances. How's that for job security? And so though he has this record of scientific failure, he has amassed more and more money and more power for himself over the decades. And so even now that Dr. Fauci has gone away, for years the most dangerous place in Washington was the space between Dr. Fauci and a TV camera. He's gone away a little bit for now, but they've held on to all of the power. So, for instance, Joe Biden has not gotten rid of the National Emergency Declaration. Dr. Fauci has come back. He said there's a new subvariant. We may need to lock down again. Airlines have kept the federal mask mandate. It's true that they're lulling us into a false sense of security over COVID before the midterms. But there's a great fear that it's all going to come back again. And so in this documentary, we go through the history of Dr. Fauci, how he amassed the power that he did. And the reason for that is we need to make sure that nothing like we've seen in the last 2 years, the erosion of our liberties, the upending of our way of life, ever happens again.
This sort of lends credence to the idea that the guy is political.
Dr. Fauci has denied that he is political, but his job is in public health, which is by definition political. There's a scientific aspect, that's the health part, and then there's a political aspect. That's the public part. That's what politics means. It means public. It's what we all do together. And Dr. Fauci gets his paycheck from the federal government. Dr. Fauci makes policy for 330 million Americans, and frankly, actually many more people around the world. So when Dr. Fauci says, don't wear the mask, and then he says, do wear the mask, his explanation for that was that he wanted to preserve the masks for the people who work in medicine. He thought there would be a mask shortage. He wanted to ration the masks for the people who he felt deserved them. That is a political decision, and he lied about his medical views to push that medical decision. But the very fact that so few people remember that Dr. Fauci on your show recommended that doctors prescribe hydroxychloroquine just shows you how incredibly effective he has been at using political power and keeping it for himself. Dr. Fauci is a man who has been able to be on the right side of every question because he's held every side of every question,
so
and he denies that he was ever on the wrong side.
That is such a smart observation. I still don't think we fully understand what's happened to us as a people, economically, socially. Radical, fundamental transformation. And I don't know how much of it was accidental, like a happy accident for leftists, versus purposeful. Do you have a sense of it?
Well, I think your first description is quite fair, because it's not as though we're saying we're going to put on our tinfoil hats and describe the reptilian cabal of evildoers plotting out every step of the pandemic. I don't think that's what anyone is saying. What we're saying is they took their opportunity. There was an opportunity here presented because of this virus that emerged. First, we were told from a Wuhan wet market. Now that seems unlikely. It seems to have emerged from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which we did happen to be funding, potentially through gain-of-function research, which we happened to be funding despite Fauci's lies to the contrary. And we've got the documents to prove it. In Fauci Unmasked. But you don't need to believe the whole thing was planned every step of the way to say that when the opportunity presented itself, leftists took it and gave themselves the kind of power that they've wanted for 100 years. It reminds me of that old line, never let a crisis go to waste. And they certainly did not. So we've seen 2 years now of complete economic upheaval, political upheaval, social upheaval, and it doesn't appear to be going away. The crisis goes on and on and on.
Coming up, the NFL demands teams hire minority or female offensive coaches.
So are they going to institute this for players, too? Are you going to say, hey, we have too many black players in the NFL? Of course not. That'd be insane.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Affirmative action in the private workplace is fine. Companies can and often do target diversity in their workplace. The NFL has long sought the Rooney Rule to put black management into place to learn the league, to remove the impediments of longstanding discrimination from the era of the league's founding. Has it gone too far? Here's Charlie Kirk.
What happens on college campuses does not stay on college campuses. It goes into corporate boardrooms, goes into the halls of Congress, and also into the Owners Association of the National Football League. Breaking out of the NFL's meeting, NFL says all teams must add minority offensive coach, expands Rooney Rule to include women. And it says the NFL has decided, quote, that it can be a female or a member of an ethnic or racial minority, according to the policy adopted by NFL owners during their annual meeting. And it'll be paid from a league-wide fund. So they're going to have an affirmative action coach just kind of walking around there, a female or a male. Now, look, I believe in the differences between men and women. Obviously, it's kind of a key hallmark of our program. It's also just biological reality. If there's a sport where I think women have the least to contribute, it'd be football. Just the way it is. I don't expect men to contribute to a lot of female sports or female-dominated sports. Quote, it's a recognition that at the moment, when you look at stepping stones for a head coach, they are the coordinator positions. Quote, we clearly have a trend where coaches are coming from the offensive side of the ball in recent years, and we clearly do not have as many minorities in the offensive coordinator. So, of course, now dead is the kind of entire program of meritocracy, and now the NFL wants to employ equity. Okay, be careful what you wish for, NFL. I love the fact that the NFL has been always a system on meritocracy. The National Basketball Association is as well. So are they going to institute this for players, too? Are they going to say, hey, we have too many black players in the NFL? Of course not. That'd be insane. No, but they're doing this for coaches. Why? Well, it's because they're trying to pander to an ever-increasing woke regime. Why are the owners putting up with this, by the way? Because they don't want the bad headlines in their local news network. The whole thing is around fear, the lack of courage. In addition, the offensive assistant coach mandate, the league also, quote, added women to the language of the Rooney Rule at all levels. It will now read that women and or people of color can satisfy the requirement to interview two external minorities for top positions, including head coach. Women are not required to be interviewed, but they are now included in the fulfillment process. This was all spurred by Brian Flores' lawsuit, who said that there's widespread discontent amongst black coaches over NFL hiring practices, despite the fact that black coaches are earning millions of dollars for being coaches. The Rooney Rule was put into place as an affirmative action rule that requires teams to interview ethnic minority candidates for head coaching and senior football operation jobs. So you might not be a football fan. You might say, oh, what does this matter? This is just another. You could just file this in the folder of the cultural changes happening in your country where we care less about the character of an individual and more about the skin color of somebody. And now it's come to the place where you would always think that meritocracy would reign supreme. Sports! That you would think that there would be a place where I don't care how you look. I don't care where you're from. I care, are you able to perform? Just win, baby, is what Al Davis would used to say. Now it's, well, you're white? Now you can't have that coaching position. Or you're a woman? Now the real question is, what is a woman? The NFL didn't mention that in their owners' meeting. 40% of the league's coaches are already minorities, which is disproportionate, by the way, to minority share of the United States population, at least in the black population. Continues by saying, quote, obviously we can address this as time goes on, but we don't see this problem as a growing issue now that we're addressing it. You need a publicized mission statement to encourage and attract diverse members of prospective ownership groups. Quote, the membership will regard as a positive, meaningful factor if the group includes diverse individuals who would have a significant equity stake in and involved with the club, serving as controlling owners of the club. Now, look, the left destroys everything it touches, and they're trying to destroy football. We already saw the damage that BLM has done to professional football, and especially, I can't remember the last time I watched basketball. It's impossible to watch. Announced as part of Roger Goodell, the worst NFL commissioner in history, a diversity advisory committee to invite outside experts to evaluate the league's diversity. So they're saying the NFL isn't diverse enough? Oh, you just mean coaches. You don't mean players. So you're okay with the NFL being a majority black league and the NBA being like a 70 or 80% black league, but you don't want the coaches to be a meritocracy? Oh, in 2021, 71% of all the players in the NFL were people of color. That is a race other than white. So Roger Goodell, are you going to now say, you know, we need to increase the amount of white players in the National Football League? If there is any industry or any community where this racist garbage just is completely self-owning, it would be the National Football League and the National Basketball Association. 58% of the NFL is black. 58% and 71% are people of color. Goodell has raised the possibility of eliminating the Rooney Rule entirely and starting over. Quote, it's been very helpful to our diversity efforts overall. So if you really want diversity, why don't you want more white people in the NFL, Roger Goodell? Or you're like, oh, no, it's meritocracy as long as it gets the outcome that we want. It's not even diversity. It's black majority, which I'm fine with because it's pure and total meritocracy. The same corrosive, cancerous garbage that we're seeing rip apart corporate America that stems from these college campuses, it's not going to stop. It's now into the place where we used to think this would be a pastime. Now, thankfully, Major League Baseball started to go a little bit woke in 2020, and I think they've pushed back against it pretty effectively. The National Football League and football is a uniquely American sport. It's about brute force. It's about machismo. It's about the ability to persevere under pressure. It's why Europeans don't understand football. Like working hard and like hitting one another, like we'd rather sip wine and do the cappuccino thing in Milan. They are now trying to wokeify football. In fact, they already have.
Coming up, the Will Smith attack on Chris Rock at the Academy Award.
The left doesn't have any sense of right or wrong.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return.
Hi, I'm Georgine Rice. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signs legislation protecting parental rights in education.
We will make sure that parents can send their kids to school to get an education, not an indoctrination.
We'll take a closer look.
He is defending the rights of parents and just asked Governor Glenn Youngkin of Virginia whether or not that is something that is appreciated by voters in his state.
Ukrainian forces hold their ground.
The Ukrainians have stopped the Russian advance cold.
While Ukrainian Christians pray.
They have a bomb shelter in the basement of their church. They organized 8 hours of praise and worship.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The Academy Awards took place Monday night and was most predictable leftist speeches from the stage in movies almost nobody saw received the bulk of acclaim. But one single moment turned a rather boring and standard Oscar evening into big news when movie star Will Smith took exception to a joke by big-name comedian Chris Rock, one of the presenters. Smith, who was seated in the front row and then approached Rock and smacked him across the face live on television, then went back to his seat, where he remained until he accepted his award for Best Actor. Here's Salem host, Mike Gallagher.
If that had happened
at the local community rec center during talent night, the police would be called, and the guy that assaulted the other guy would have been taken away in handcuffs. In Hollywood, they give him an Oscar and a standing ovation. They don't have any values at all. The left doesn't have any sense of right or wrong. They have no accountability. They are not mere mortals. They're stars. And the rest of us are dirt under their Gucci's. That's all it is. It's the same thing with COVID rules and vaccination laws and mandates. The mayor of New York has literally exempted multi-millionaire athletes and entertainers from vaccine mandates. So hardworking New Yorkers who have to roll up their sleeves and get the vax or lose their jobs, they're not exempt. Doesn't matter if they have a religious belief. It doesn't matter if they have a health concern. You either get the vaccine in New York or you lose your career or your livelihood or your job. But if you're Kyrie Irving, you're A-OK with Eric Adams. And I hate to bring in race into this elitism, but I'll just put it out there on the table. Here's a lot of African-Americans who don't want to get the vaccine. I believe Kyrie Irving is an African-American. I believe. So an African-American mayor is taking care of fellow African-American athletes by making sure they don't have to lose their paycheck, their gazillion-dollar paycheck, because they can dribble a basketball. They're exempt, but the hardworking black concession stand workers or white waitresses or Hispanic cop or Asian firefighter, they're all out. They get fired, but Kyrie Irving is exempt because he's special. Will Smith can assault a man on worldwide television, and he won't have any accountability for that because he's special. Hollywood doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. Hollywood struts around and acts like they're socially aware, and they're not even as aware as the nose on their Botoxed faces. Standing there with his Oscar in his hand, tears streaming down the face, telling us how hard he's got it in life. Yeah, you really got it rough. You got a rough life, Will Smith.
I'd like to thank the Academy of Listeners, those of you who join us every week for Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on the earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producer Charlie Richards, David Pichon, Michael Koch, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, Harley Idy, Alex Perez, and of course, Dash Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.